Thanks for listening to the best of the Ben Maller Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 2 to 6 Eastern, 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And to find your local station for the Ben Maller Show at foxsportsradio.com, you can find it there. Or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of the Ben Maller Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Now, I want you to know that if it was up to me, I would start this show with nothing but Clipper propaganda. But I'm not going to do that. I'm professional. I know what the lead story is. It's not a regular season NBA game. We have time to get to that. We got 4 hours of talk radio real estate to navigate our way through. So I could sit here and wax poetic about how the NBA season's already over and the Clippers are going to go 82-0, but you already knew that. I don't need to say that. I could dance on the grave of the Lakers and enjoy the schadenfreude of Anthony Davis being a bust already as a Laker. I mean, I could do all that, but I'm not going to start with that. No, I'm not going to start with that because I was multitasking. Not only I was at that NBA game, I was at that Laker-Clipper game. Me and my favorite protesters from Hong Kong, we're all having a wonderful time. What a scene. I wait till we get to that. What a scene that was. But I was watching very intently Joe Buck and John Smoltz on the Fox Box That Rocks calling game one of the 2019 World Series. I want to point out that this is the first World Series in several years I've not been to because the bums are not in the World Series. But if you had the Astros sweeping the Fall Classic, you are a big fat loser. Ha ha! Not going to happen. Now, if you did not watch the game, maybe you missed it.
I liked him in that spot. I really did.
Maybe you missed it. The Astros got off to a picture-perfect start. Washington fell behind early because Houston getting putting the opposing pitcher, Max Scherzer, on the ropes in the first inning. A lot of pitches. The pitch count was very high. He extended a lot of injury or a lot of what's the word I'm looking for? They were pressure pitches, right? They were stressful pitches for Max Scherzer from the very beginning. And Yuri Gurriel, the man of the hour there from the 2017 World Series, is he going to make racist gestures in this World Series? I know he's done it in the past, so he might do it
racist again.
But anyway, he had the big hit in the first inning. And so Washington, you're like, oh, man, the only advantage the Nationals really had was to score first. Right, the only advantage they really had was to score first. On the road, they didn't score first. You're like, ah, crap, they're screwed. Now they got to score 3 runs against Gerrit Cole. 3 runs against this guy. That's an impossible feat. No one, you can't climb that mountain against Gerrit Cole. Well, it turns out, surprise, you can climb that mountain. And it was the Nationals that went blitzkrieging Houston after falling behind early. They were dinging and dunking hits against Gerrit Cole along the way. A plethora of great at-bats for Washington, led by the headliner, Juan Soto. And here's how the media is handling Juan Soto's night. Lick, lick, and all that. They can't get enough of Juan Soto. And he was good. He had a single, a double, a homer, 3 RBIs, and he's the headliner above the fold here. And the Astros did chip away. They scored a run in the seventh, a run in the eighth. But Houston could do little in the ninth inning. See what I did? Do little in the ninth inning. See what I did there? That's what we call a pun. See, that's a pun, and that's how that works. All right, so the Nationals win by the skin on their chinny chin chin, as the little piggies told me when I was a kid. So let's discuss the question, are you surprised that the Nationals took game one of the World Series? No, I am. Listen, I looked at this abso-freaking-lutely. When I looked at this World Series, I said the game to steal is not game one. It's game two. Verlander has not been that great. That's a guy you can get to if you're Washington. And now that obviously did not play out. But when I looked at this at the beginning, I expected game two to be the more probable winnable game for Washington. And now they still have an opportunity, obviously, to win game two, but they've already won game one. So my thoughts here on game one of the World Series, you've got Old Faithful, Sneaky Good, and Mr. Perfect, he's not. And we will combine all these things together. Now, the Nationals, I think we laid this out already. They had no business winning this game. The Astros spotting Gerrit Cole, or the Nationals rather, spotting Gerrit Cole two runs and having to play from behind. And this is the guy that has been the Madison Bumgarner of this postseason. And he had not lost since May 22nd. They had all the stats on the Fox broadcast. Astros were 26-7 in games he started. They had won his final 13 regular season starts. And Houston was 3-0 when Gerrit Cole had started in the playoffs. That's a 16-game winning streak that is now finito, done, see you later. His playoff ERA was 0.40. I can go on and on.
Finito, done.
Yeah. Now, we did mention this in a previous Mallet monologue. Not that I'm here to pat myself on the back, but the dreaded law of averages, right? The law of averages working against Gerrit Cole. No one's perfect. Everyone's going to have an off night now and again. And he was overdue. He was past his expiration date as far as an off night is concerned. And that's exactly what happened for Gerrit Cole, who's still going to make $200 million in free agency from somebody. But Cole, who has been able, watching him pitch in the postseason against Tampa and the Yankees, he has been able to throw everything in the kitchen sink for strikes in the playoffs and have pitchers fool, or batters rather, fooled. But on this night, he was done in by what is really has been his version of Old Faithful. Fastballs and sliders. He doesn't throw a lot of pitches, but the fastballs and sliders gave up two home runs. Gerrit Cole did on the four-seam fastball, proving that, again, no one is invincible. And then Adam Eaton had a go-ahead ribby single, and Juan Soto a two-run double. Both those were on the slider. Slide, baby, slide. Didn't slide, apparently. And this game proving that Gerrit Cole, although he looked like this, not a cyborg. He's not a cyborg. And also, anybody that's gambled on sports knows that there's no such thing as a sure thing. And you never assume because you end up making an ass out of you and me, as I was told by a police officer years ago. So anyway, part B of this. Now, the Washington Nationals offense, you know what they are? Sneaky good. They are sneaky good. It is completely unexpected when you looked at what they had done during the regular season and you looked at how they match up with these other teams. And they haven't won the World Series by any means. But the big hit, everyone's pointing to Juan Soto, but for me it was Ryan Zimmerman hitting that home run right away, right? The waters were choppy. There was turbulence for the Nationals. They'd fallen behind 2-0 in the bottom of the first, and Zimmerman came back and hit that home run and calmed everyone down and made it a one-run game. Now, when you're down two, you're like, man, we got to score three. When you're down any at-bat, when you're down one run, it could be the tying run at the plate. So that, to me, was the key here that set that up. And then, obviously, Soto, that 3-2 pitch that he slammed on the double to deep left field for a couple runs, not chopped liver. But this continues a trend. Washington has been extremely good in clutch, tight situations. They've been very cool under pressure here. And Fox had a graphic. I don't know if you saw this or not, but at one point they put a graphic up that, do you know what percentage of the Washington Nationals runs have scored in the postseason with two outs? 49%. 49% of the runs have come with two outs. Now, you know, typically that's not how it works. But when you're winning, that's how it works. And so they've been a team that has played with grit. They've been better than advertised, for sure, the Nationals have. And it reminds us all, there is no rhyme or reason for any of this. It is the randomness of the baseball postseason in play. And it's certainly possible the Astros could win the next four games and it'll be a five-game series. I don't think that's going to happen. But Washington National hitters have shown an ability, an astute ability to remain very calm and controlled in situations in which most other players become upset or afraid. Now, to be fair, the Astros have also done much of that themselves. They didn't really do that here. Also, George Springer getting called out. Springer with that play, when he didn't hustle, and if he had hustled, could have set up Altuve for just a sack fly to tie the game. So it's a bad job by him. All right, now the last word here. So while this is clearly a setback, it is far from backbreaking for Houston. It is always how you respond to these type of situations. Now, they had an opportunity here to come back, and that would have been gut-wrenching if the Nationals had lost that game, and they were teetering on the brink of blowing that game, the Nationals, as Houston creeped back into the game. But the thing about this is the Astros obviously had to put their house back to order, But the door has now been opened a lot. It's not just a little crack in the door. It's opened a lot. And this gives the Nationals a pretty large confidence booster. And when you beat the top pitcher in the game, you have done something to be very proud of here. And the thing that scares you, if you're the Astros and should give you heartburn and anxiety, is Justin Verlander and the rocky nature of Justin Verlander, because Mr. Perfect, he is not. Now, he hasn't been great in the postseason. He's 1-2, an ERA of 3.70, which is pretty average. So he's had a couple of bad starts in the postseason. Now, both of them were on the road. This game, too, will be at home. But in his career, Verlander, you know what his record is in the World Series? 0-4 in the World Series in his starts. Now, 2 years ago, I saw it. Verlander started twice in the 2017 World Series. They ended up in a tie, and he had a couple of quality starts, but got a no decision in Game 2. And in Game 6, he got the loss, and so that's his resume. He has not been a dominant, over-the-top, great World Series performer, Justin Verlander. And Washington comes back with Steven Strasburg, who has been the better pitcher of late. And in the postseason here, four appearances this playoff, and he's 3-0 with a 1.64 ERA. But as my friend Dick Stockton taught me when I was a kid, he pointed out to me that tells you what has happened, not what's going to happen. That's why you watch the games. Anyway, A.J. Hinch, you got some explaining to do. Here's A.J. Hinch pointing out that, listen, Garrett Cole, let's be easy on Garrett Cole. Let's take it easy on him here.
There was a lot of good with Garrett. I think, you know, he came into the game very well and then lost a couple of key two-strike battles.
That's an understatement. All right, here's more from A.J. Hinch, who says, despite everyone and their mother picking the Astros in a route or root in this World Series, he says he knew better than that.
We knew it was going to be tough. These guys are really tough to put away. They don't strike out a lot, and they proved tonight that putting the ball in play and a couple two-strike at-bats, finding some holes, hitting a few balls hard, a couple balls out of the ballpark. It was that's how they beat him.
That's how they beat him, right there. That's how they beat him. All right, let's hear from one of the key participants for the Houston Astros. Because remember, what do we always say? The mantra of the show, the better story is in the losing locker room. And so while I certainly wax poetic about the Washington Nationals, because me and Roberto have natitude, that's right, man. Dodger fans for Nationals. That's how we do it. Damn right. But anyway, George Springer had a couple of hits, scored a couple of runs, had a couple of RBIs, and you look at that box score, you say, boy, he played well. Had a double, had a home run. But the hustle. He didn't run out of the box in that key moment late in the game, and that turned out to be a back-breaking decision of being a sluggard. Here is Springer explaining why he's lazy.
I was watching him the whole time. You know, that's kind of one of those things where I don't want to necessarily run as fast as I can, because for some reason, if he tags or whatever the case, and I run by him, it's not good. So I just kind of was watching the outfielder. I mean, he made an incredible bid on it, and you know, I'm kind of lucky right there. But it doesn't really matter. I mean, they won the game, and we'll move on to tomorrow.
It's rationalizing is what that is. That's a spin, spinny McSpin, spinning like a dreidel at Hanukkah. Yeah, spinning that around it. Wow.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We are 175 days till the end of the NBA regular season. 175 days. They will play 82 games in 175 days. The postseason will start a couple days after that. Game one of the NBA Finals is projected to start in 225 days. Will either the Lakers or Clippers be in the NBA Finals? According to the gambling world, one of them is most likely to be in the NBA Finals. They played each other, the Battle of L.A. What a scene this was. I was at this game. We'll get back to the World Series in a little bit, but I was at this game. So Kawhi Leonard beginning life as a Clipper. And he went out and scored 30 points, and the Clippers bench emasculating the Lakers. It was insane. You talk about coming in waves, the Clipper bench. Everyone, you get 10, you get 10 over there. You in the back, you get 10. Insane how effective and how dominant the Clipper bench was, and that's one of the reasons the Clippers are the choice of the NBA executives to win the NBA championship. Very reminiscent, although not as, I would say, not as dominant, it would appear, as how Golden State could come at you with waves of players, although they were even more top-heavy than the Clippers. I don't think the Clippers are that top-heavy, although Kawhi is great. But, I mean, this particular game, Lou Williams, sweet Lou Williams, the secret weapon, Montrezl Harrell, those guys, Williams had 21, Montrezl Harrell had 17 off the bench. But that bench scoring statistic is going to be the thing that is the separation. The Clippers out in the second quarter played very well, but overall, the bench scoring is the thing. So let's discuss all of this, the good, the bad, and the ugly from the first night of the NBA, the big marquee matchup there with Shaq and Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith and Ernie Johnson wandering around as they spoil the debut of Anthony Davis as a Laker. So the question, your impressions from round one between the Lakers and Clippers, the Battle of Los Angeles. My observations, you've got Charlie Brown, Venice Beach, and Frank Sinatra. And we will put all these things together. Now, number one.
Number one.
I'm not going to lie to you. This is a satisfying win. It's not the greatest win in Clippers history, but it's a satisfying win as far as a regular season game is concerned. The Clippers lived up to the hype. And it's only one game, blah, 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 blah. But you got the micro and the macro in play. Now, in the macro, obviously this is a confidence-boosting situation. The Clippers are supposed to be good, but you still have to go out and do it. That's the hard part there. And they fell behind early in this game. They looked nervous. They were missing shots. They were discombobulated. And then, like every other NBA game, they stormed back. Didn't matter. You know, watch the first quarter. What's more irrelevant than the first quarter of an NBA game? The Lakers came out. They looked like the Harlem Globetrotters the first few minutes of the game. And then after that, they didn't look like the Harlem Globetrotters anymore. And boy, was it fun to goof on the Laker historians. I'm also not going to be disingenuous about that. Biggest front runners in sports. Biggest front runners in sports. They actually believed that they would win this game. I had people tell me, oh, they're going to win by 40. I can't wait till you have to do a Maller monologue after the Lakers win by 40. How adorable is that? Really, how adorable is that? Like, if the Laker historians, if you could sum them up as a cartoon character, I'm talking about the post-Dr. Buss, since he kicked the bucket and died, the Laker franchise and their fan, not fan base, historian base, could be summed up in a cartoon character. It would be Charlie Brown, right? Laker historians are Charlie Brown trying to kick a football only to have Lucy cruelly pull the football away at the last second. This is now, think about recent Laker history. They had how many straight lottery picks? I know they had back-to-back number two picks. I think they had three in a row? I think they had number two picks in the lottery. All of them were busts as Lakers. Some of those guys have gone on and been effective NBA players elsewhere. They signed LeBron James. No brainer. You sign LeBron James, you're going to the finals. Missed the playoffs. They missed the playoffs with LeBron James, right? Now they sign Anthony Davis. How'd he look late in the game? He was terrible down the stretch. So was LeBron. Now, I know it's only one game, but that's all we have to talk about here. That's it. That's all. And you can't make this stuff up. Now, in the macro, this game, I get, is meaningless as far as who's going to win the NBA championship. It's all about how you play in April, May, and June. But it's certainly easier. I think we can all agree on this. It's easier to navigate the postseason in the NBA when you win a bunch of regular season games. It's been proven over time that that sets you up to enter the Goldilocks zone when you're at home more often than when you're on the road, although it's only one game that separates home and road. Now, the second thing, and we're going to get back to the game, but aside from the game itself, I got to tell you, it was a surreal scene at Staples Center, and I was in attendance at this particular game. I have been going to that gymnasium, that very high, expensive gymnasium, for 20 years. I was there the first night when the LA Kings opened it up, and they opened that arena up, and I have seen homeless people with knives get past security at Staples Center. I have myself been chased by redcoats in the early days of that arena because I took a Dr. Pepper out of the arena, and at that point they wouldn't allow you to do that, even though it was a free Dr. Pepper, and they wouldn't allow you to do it. I have never in my life witnessed what I saw Tuesday night around Staples Center. There was such a huge police presence. It was Super Bowl-like security. I would go as far as to say a demilitarized zone is what it would appear there. It was Venice Beach mixed with old school Times Square. I'm talking like 1980s when there were peep shows on every corner in New York in Times Square, and the Fremont Street experience. It was all of those things rolled into a spooky neighborhood is what it was. And it, you know, the bad side of the tracks, we're talking about full-on freak show. Now, I sent some pictures out. If you follow me on social media, I sent some pictures out. But I understand a lot of this was people just opportunists, but it was because of China and Hong Kong and the fallout from LeBron James and his words and the fact that this was a big deal for basketball because TNT was there and it was a big event. It was the showcase game to start the NBA season. And so there were opportunists that decided to take advantage of that and try to get some attention for their cause. And these are legit protesters, professional protesters. They were passing out pro-Hong Kong t-shirts to people. Now, I was going to take one, actually, because I do support Hong Kong, but I didn't do it because I thought I might get ejected from the arena, and I didn't want to get ejected from the arena, so I turned down the shirt there. But, you know, free shirt. Who turns down a free shirt? Right? I mean, who does that? So there was that going on with that. We had one guy, and there were actually several people that had anti-LeBron James signs, outrageous signs directed at LeBron James. And it was LeBron that parroted the talking points of the Chinese government, the People's Republic of China, the Communist government of China, that fueled much of this. It continued the narrative there, and he came out and played the victim card. And all that. There were people holding up American flags. It was crazy town. Now, I will tell you that when I left the arena, I saw a lot of those pro-Hong Kong shirts being worn by homeless people. There are tons of homeless people in Los Angeles. I'm guessing that was not the intention when they were handing out the pro-Hong Kong shirts for the homeless population in Los Angeles to get a new shirt. But it certainly appeared like that happened.
Jesus, am I speaking Chinese?
Yeah. Well, anyway, so as far as the game itself, I'll go back to the game itself. The game within the game. Now, this game was uber close going to the fourth quarter. In fact, it was a tie game. I don't think it gets any closer than that when it's a tie game going to the fourth quarter. I believe that's as close as it gets. So the Clippers outscored the Lakers 27-17. In the fourth quarter, though, and I've heard from several pundits that the most unstoppable dynamic duo in basketball is Anthony Davis and LeBron James. You cannot defend these guys in a two-man game. You cannot do it. It's impossible. It's an impossible situation. You know what these two knuckleheads shot in the fourth quarter between the two of them, the most unstoppable force in the modern NBA? They shot 16% from the floor in the fourth quarter. They made one field goal between them. LeBron was 1 of 4. Anthony Davis was 0 of 2 from the floor in the fourth quarter. And combined, those two had more turnovers, 4 of them, than points in the final 12 minutes of the game. Now, listen, the Clippers are a good defensive team. The Lakers, we'll see how good they are. Maybe they'll be good, maybe they're not. But we know the Clippers are going to be pretty good. Lakers shot 31% in the fourth quarter of that game in a 50-50 game, 50-50 raffle game, anybody's game. You can win, you can win, you can win. You know, it was up in the air. Is what it was. And really, the player that dominated was Montrezl Harrell down the stretch. He was wonderful. Kawhi Leonard made a bunch of foul shots that certainly helped the cause there for the Clippers. But they play the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are opening up that new arena. I think it's Thursday in San Francisco, and we'll see what happens in that particular game. But dominating performance there late in the game by the Clips, and really after falling behind by double digits early in the game. So the final thing on all this. Now, this was one of the most enjoyable nights I've had as a sports fan this year. And again, I know it's Schadenfreude. I know that. But boy, was it neat seeing Garrett Cole take it on the chin and the Astros, who are, you know, the Astro fans. We have a love-hate. I mean, we're on the Astro station, so I can't hate the Astro fans, but I don't have to like them. And so that's where I'm at. with that. I also loved watching the body language of the Laker historians. There were a lot of Lakers historians that were in the house there, and it was, you know, it was like that classic Frank Sinatra song back in the day, the old crooner. You're riding high in April, you're shot down in May. In this case, you're riding high in the first quarter, and you're shot down in the fourth quarter. Because it, you know, they started with a bang and ended with a whimper. They ended with a whimper. And I loved it because the Laker historians, I was watching them, and they were standing up. You know, they were flashing their LeBron jerseys, their Kobe jerseys, their Shaq jerseys, and all this. They were loving it. Every basket there in the first quarter, they could not get enough. And then by the fourth quarter, they were, you know, when the Clippers went on that early run there, they were just like, okay. I'll just shut up now. I'll be quiet. You know, I'll just be quiet and all that stuff. So anyway, it is the Ben Maller Show. We'll take some phone calls. If you'd like to be part, the lines are open, and you can join the fun here at 877-99 on Fox. 877-996-6369. I'm already getting hate messages from people that can't stand the NBA. Why are you talking about the NBA? Okay. I like the NBA. I don't mind talking about the NBA. Now, we don't talk too, I'm going to be fair here, we don't talk too much regular season NBA. We don't. We save a lot of it. Well, I love John Tesh. That song is wonderful. Fire me up some NBA. It's great music. Wonderful. But we pick our spots. Obviously, the playoffs in April, May, and June are big NBA months. But I know where our bread is buttered. I know what keeps the lights on here at Fox Sports Radio, and it's the NFL. And so I'm not going to get too far away from the NFL at all. Larry writes
in. I'm a football player.
Larry says, so what you are saying is that the NBA security is taking lessons from the communist Chinese government on how to handle its people. Well, I didn't say that. I'm just saying it was like racist. It was like a police state outside the arena. I had to go through a metal detector just to get to where I needed to go to get into the arena. I had to go through two metal detectors to go to a basketball game. I mean, I know it's the world we live in a little bit. I usually have to go through one metal detector. There was a second wave of metal detectors. It was nuts. Anyway,
I saw there was one outside right on Chickern Way.
Yeah,
right?
They closed the street.
Yeah.
TNT had like a fun zone thing.
Oh,
they
that's
had
why.
Carnival
yeah.
rides and things like that. But you could not get to the actual arena itself. You had to walk through, at least when I got there, you had to walk through that area. And they had like basketball hoops set up, and they had big fat heads of Charles Barkley, who's already got a fat head. And they had Kenny Smith and all those guys. And they had, you know, it was actually a pretty cool setup. They spent a lot of money on it, but I could do without the seven metal detectors that they had lined up there.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific. It's Maller.
How about that?
To the third degree. This is when Big Ben gets grilled.
So Juan Soto's got to get 10 more hits in game two, and then he'll tie the all-time record. Let's get to the third degree. Here's the Coop de Loop.
Ben, the Patriots sent a second-round pick to the Falcons for wide receiver Mohamed Sanu.
Yeah.
And I think he's going by like Sanu Sr. now, right? Something like that?
I don't know. I know him as Mohamed Sanu.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, some are saying that it's too big of a price. How do you see Sanu working out in New England?
Well, it's the Patriots. It'll be great. I know it doesn't always work out great. Antonio Brown didn't work out great, but I certainly have to believe in Belichick here. Number one, the Patriots have been giving Jacoby Myers and Brandon Bolden looks in the passing game. The bar is low in Foxborough at the wide receiver position, and all these wins against tomato cans are nice, but we talked about this earlier with Wayne from Southie. The real football people know that Patriots are lacking diverse playmakers on offense. That's their problem. And the second thing, Mohamed Sanu has at times been uber productive with the Bengals, an off-the-grid guy, never the number one receiver for Andy Dalton. He had A.J. Green and some other people. And even early in his Falcon career, behind Julio Jones, he was very successful. He's not a centerpiece player, but for the Patriots, considering their depth chart, he does become an X factor for the New England Patriots. We'll see if they make another trade before the deadline next week, but it's pretty simple. For Mohamed Sanu, get open, and guess what? Spoiler alert, Tom Brady's going to find you. Now, he is in for a culture shock, though, going from the Bengals and the Falcons to the Patriots. That is a different world. All right, next!
Michael Jordan expressed his opinion this week that Steph Curry is not a Hall of Famer yet. What do you think Jordan's beef is with Curry?
Yeah, I saw this. I love the NBA world circling the wagons here. And how about Steve Kerr, who was in an awkward position? Jordan's teammate with those Bulls teams and Steph Curry's coach. How awkward a predicament is that? Because he wants no one to hate him other than the U.S. government. But anyway, listen. First of all, Michael Jordan loves to bust balls. I think that's all this is. He is notorious for holding certain NBA players of the modern era to ridiculous standards. That is just how Michael Jordan is wired. And when you are a legend of the status of Michael Jordan, you can set your own rules. And Jordan's choosing to do this here. And, you know, yeah, Curry is not enshrined in the Hall of Fame because he hasn't retired yet. He will be in the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame, obviously. I think some of this is also envy. Jordan is envious that Curry's still playing and Jordan's, you know, he's retired and doing whatever he's doing, but he's not playing. He wants to have that spotlight. He wishes he'd get back to his glory days playing in the NBA. But as far as the Nate Smith Basketball Hall of Fame, if Muffet McGraw is enshrined, then I believe Steph Curry will be enshrined as well. I mean, Muffet McGraw is in there. So that's where the bars. If it was baseball, you'd say, well, maybe he has to do more, but it's not. It's basketball. All right, next.
Ben, despite a 6-1 record, Auburn head coach Gus Malzahn is said to be on the hot seat.
Yeah.
But he's got a buyout that would be worth more than $27 million if Auburn removes him. What are the odds that Auburn will pony up that kind of cash to change coaches?
All right, so it's weird because Auburn's 6-1, but Gus Malzahn, they want him gone again. They just gave him a big contract not that long ago. They're never satisfied. They're in the shadow of Alabama, the Crimson Tide there. And so it's a mess. I mean, that is the standard. You've got to be like Alabama football, and Auburn's not as good as Alabama. We know that. And B, Malzahn, he's not untouchable, but he's close to untouchable. You think about the math on this. It would take, by my Maller math, $70 million because it's a $27 million buyout, which would be a waste of money. But then you got to hire another coach, which would be like another $30 million minimum to get a big-name coach into Auburn. So you're talking about a $70 million investment likely when you get done with all the X's and O's and all that stuff. So I mean, it's unlikely. He controls his own destiny. Auburn plays LSU, Georgia, and Alabama. If they go 0-3, we can revisit this conversation. There it is, Maller to the third degree. How did we do?
Ben, you passed this edition.
That is a winner. Put it on the board, just like the Clippers and the Nationals.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Attention, everyone.
And the password is... Password. You idiot. Password, the word game of the stars. Here's Ben Maller.
And away we go. It's time now for Password, the word game of the stars, each and every week at about this time. Let's welcome in our contestants, all the thrills and spills. It'll take one's breath away. Unless it doesn't. We welcome in Jason in Windsor, who's going to play. Hello, Jason.
Ben, you're a great American. It's great to be back.
Top of the morning to you, Jason. How's life treating you?
Oh, very well, Ben. Very well.
Good. All right. Very cool. Hold on a sec. Let's see. And we've either got 7 or 2. Roberto picked 7 or 2?
7.
All right, you have picked Lenny. Hello, Lenny. Oh, I don't hear Lenny. Is Lenny not there? All right, well, did you see your show?
Hey.
Hello.
Hey. What's up?
You ready to go, Lenny? Where were you? Is there a delay?
Yeah, a little bit of a race, huh?
All right. Let's play the game. Hold on a sec. Lenny works at a cemetery there in Florida.
Yeah. Crematory company, cremation company.
God's waiting room right there, yes. All right, very nice. So hold on a sec here. Put you over there. Put you over here. Hey, Jason, who do you want to partner up with, Jason?
Let's give him hell, Ben.
All right, Jason, teaming up with me, and that means, Lenny, you got to play with one of these other jamokes. Who do you want to partner up with? Koopa Loop. All right, that's the matchup. So Jason in Windsor and me, Ben, and Coop is teamed up with Lenny. And the way this works, Jason, we have 10 words. Pick a number 1 to 10, please.
1, please.
Number 1.
Number 1.
All right, you picked number 1. Let's go with, let's see here. Buccaneer.
Football.
No. No. All right, go ahead, Koopaloo.
Let's go with swashbuckler.
Pirate.
Yeah.
I would have gone Pittsburgh.
All right. We'll move on. Pick another word there. Lenny.
Number 2 for Kawhi.
Ah, good job by you. How great is that? Beautiful thing.
Pipe down, Lenny.
Take it easy, Lenny.
All right, let's go with, oh, man, what am I going to do for this?
I might want to do something.
Let's go with.
Sounds painful. Sounds like you're on the toilet.
Abrasion.
Bruise.
No.
It's
a tough one.
How about painful?
Scratch?
No.
Okay, Lenny, I'm gonna try going in a different direction, more Ben's direction.
Oh, wow. That never worked.
Let's go aching.
Aching. Scar.
No, we already had it. Let's go. All right, I'll say it. I'm not afraid to say it. Throbbing.
Pain.
No, I already said painful as a clue, so it wouldn't be pain. All right, down to like 4 points.
Let's hurry up. Let's go with, I don't know, lesion.
I have no idea.
All right.
Mark.
No, it's the word we're looking for is sore. If something's painful or throbbing or any of those. Anyway, all right, we'll go back to Jason. Pick a number, Jason, 1 to 10 here, please, but not 1 or 2.
Number 3.
Wow, we're going in order. How nice of you to go in order there. Most people don't go in order. Let's go with, oh, boy. Here we go again. This is not a one-word thing, but I'll go with, how about stagger?
Stumble?
Oh, man, no.
We're going with 3, right?
Yeah, 3.
All right, let's go with, let's go with cards.
Stagger cards.
Yeah, there you go.
Cards, stagger cards. Shuffle.
Yeah! No!
Lenny, we lost.
Good job, Lenny.
Jason, what happened, Jason? Oh, no. All right, well, thank you. Better luck next time, Jason. And Lenny, you won. You win.
Right.
Shuffle. We only had 3 words, but Lenny wins a golden ticket there on Password, the word game of the stars. Man. Those were good clues.
Got a murder. Gotta go.
Nah, come on. I don't have to go anywhere, please.